You are indeed. My guest is Daryl Sims. He's a UFO investigator. And what he said during the last portion of the last hour, I thought made a lot of sense. And that is, a lot of these UFO abductees have, in essentially, a screensaver kind of memory imposed on their mind after the experience. And when you lift that, when you get inside that, you find somebody who's been screaming. We'll pursue all that in a moment. Right now, across the nation and beyond, Daryl, there are UFO abductees listening to what you're saying right now. And you're saying, I guess, to most of them, if I'm hearing you correctly, that whatever experience they think they had that was warm and fuzzy, they probably didn't have at all. Is that correct?
That generally is the case. It doesn't mean that contactees out there, people who refer to themselves as contactees or have that mentality, it doesn't mean some of them didn't have positive experiences, because it depends on what it is they're going to do to you as to whether you refer to it as positive or not. But the issue is that many of these people, including abductees, have been given a screensaver memory, and once you get past that, in many cases, you're going to find something else. A perfect case in point is a professor's wife I worked with over in Slovakia when I did a presentation for the former intelligence agents from the Soviet Union and the Soviet bloc that broke off from the Soviet Union then. And we all got together and had an incredible time. And I gave a four-hour presentation. And one of the things I did was to work with his wife afterward. She said, "I've been a contactee, and I just feel like something's wrong. And I don't understand this." And I worked with her maybe 15 minutes, and I'm telling you, she started screaming. She says, "Oh my God, they're lying." And she figured that out. No one told her a thing. She figured it out all by herself. You just have to teach them to remember with their body, because your body remembers everything.
All right. Is some of it so terrifying that perhaps they'd be better off not remembering?
My response to everyone that writes me on the UFO phenomena, and in a case in point, guy wrote and said, he said, "I actually had a my my," he said, my mother was there." He says, I know that's true." He said, "But I could be making it up." I said, "Buddy, please don't do this. If you open Pandora's box, you'll never get it closed." And I said, "It's something you're going to live with the rest of your life." And he did. He went to his mother and told her the story, and she finally confirmed it for him. Young man, about 23 years old. And she says, "But they always brought you back." He said, "What am I going to do now?" I said, "What are you going to do now?" I said, "I told you, if you open this box, you're never going to get it closed."
And you've been at this 38 years, including this latest Pennsylvania case. What is the best physical evidence that you've found, collected, or even seen?
The best physical evidence that I've enjoyed and is some of the physical evidence we find on the abductees, or in this case, in the Pennsylvania case, we actually found in their home.
Oh.
They actually had a print of a large hand, which I put on, it's on your website, as a matter of fact, and under my presentation there tonight, it shows a whole series of handprints on the wall there, and we actually removed the sheetrock because it had a suet material, oily-like material to the huge handprint. Now, I have very large hands, and those fingers are about nearly 4 inches longer than mine.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. You say 4 inches larger than
Yeah,
yours.
if they're, when they're stretched out, they're curled down. They're longer than mine, even though they're curled down. If you straighten them out, they're about 4 inches longer. They're very, very similar to young man, I saw on your website a young man that had a handprint across his chest, and I wrote him about his event, and I said, "I want you to look at this hand that I'm going to put up there tonight." I said, "The reason I'm asking you to do this is because it's very similar to the same size of the hand that's on your chest." And I said,
Yeah, it's very hard in this photograph that you've supplied, and I'm looking at it right now, to make out the scale, the size, the actual size.
Look at the, if you can go to the, I'm going to pull that up myself here. But if you can...
Okay, you all right. You've got a...
Yes,
oh, I see.
Yes,
all right.
Just pan down.
You've got a ruler
see.
There.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
You've got a ruler there.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
The thing
That's
is
big.
Huge. I've never seen one that big in the UFO yeah. phenomena. That's just very unusual.
Yeah, I needed to scroll down. Yeah, I see you've got all kinds of scale
yes,
in here.
Sir.
Okay. Yeah, it's big, all right. Holy smokes.
And then when I saw that one of the young man with the hand across his chest, who woke up in the morning with that big print on his chest, I thought we may have the same guy here. So
mm-hmm.
I
How did this handprint get on the wall?
The young man describes the entity, even consciously, at some of these events consciously, the entity leaning against the wall there. And, of course, naturally, I talked to the mother. She was doing a lot herself. But I had mentioned to her that we need to check this with a fluorescent lighting and different kinds of light infrared and ultraviolet lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And she started doing this as best she could before I got there. And then she actually took a marker and drew around the soot that was there to give an illustration of how much material was left on the wall. Obviously, we want to do DNA testing on that and find out if there's anything there that we need to know about.
Okay. So you've got this. What other, over the years, what evidence, other evidence have you actually run into? Have you ever been presented with a piece of spacecraft, a spacecraft?
Well, we've been presented with several things that that in theory were part of a spacecraft, and after I examined it for nearly 2 years, I found out that it wasn't. It was a piece of high-tech material, but it, in fact, was not part of the, and they alleged it was a Roswell craft. The guy that gave me the piece paid $35,000, do you not even believe this, to an ex-CIA guy who also was a scammer, in my opinion, and was out of the company and was bootlegging, doing all kinds of things, including break-ins and everything else. And he met this guy, and the guy needed the money, and so he gave him this piece of high-tech metal and said, this came from the Roswell crash. The guy bought into that, paid him $35,000, and it took me a year and a half to finally figure out that that had nothing to do with anything. Not really.
All right. Well, how do we know any of this is real? And by that I mean, how do we know, you know, and I know that the people who are reporting abductions and all the rest of it, really, truly, I don't for one second doubt that they believe what they're saying. But there's a gap between that and being able to prove that it really happened, that it that all this is real, that it's not just made up bunk or sleep paralysis or whatever.
I agree with you. CNN called, and they spent 2 days down here at my home and asked if they could come up, and they said, we'd like for you to debate Dr. Susan Clancy at Harvard and so on. And I said, there's no debate. I said, I win. She says, no, that easy. And I said, yeah, it actually is.
Oh, no, wait a minute. How do you win so easily?
She said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, the problem is, I said, you're asking me to debate, and it was Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and myself. You're asking us to debate her viewpoints. I said, her premise is incorrect. She's, what do you mean? I said, well, she's assuming that everyone's asleep and they're having sleep paralysis. She said, yes. I said, young lady, I said, I was abducted when I was hunting in a hot New Mexico desert at 16 years old. What kind of sleep paralysis do you think I was having in broad daylight? I said, do you know that over 60% of abductions occur in daylight or in waking times? I said, her premise
okay,
is incorrect.
But you know, let me play devil's advocate for a moment.
Sure.
There are instances of people having psychotic slips, having all kinds of psychiatric short-term problems that are remembered by that person in certain ways, even during waking moments. How do you prove it, Daryl?
Dr. Gene Mundy, Professor Emeritus, Long Island University, did a study specifically. She teaches this on a PhD level. I said, why didn't you call her in as one of your consults? I said, she will tell you that by and large, the abductees, interviewed many of them. She said, these people have no psychopathology. Same thing John Mack and others found out. There is no psychopathology that is resident in these people by and large. They're normal, natural people having amazing events. She said, first of all, hallucination isn't even formed that way. And you can't have group hallucination over 50 years. It isn't going to happen. It's not the nature. Should I teach this on a PhD level?
Yeah, but we haven't moved all of this, Daryl, from the anecdotal story to hardcore proof of any kind at all that takes the whole abduction scenario from stories and certainly interesting stuff to reality. I don't know how we move it from here to there. Do you?
Well, one of the things we've done is to focus on, this is exactly our viewpoint, is to focus on physical evidence. And this is the reason that the Pennsylvania case interested me, because in my view, if we don't provide the medical and scientific community with good, solid evidence, we're not going to be able to make a case, period. That's why I finally wrote a book after 38 years, because I think now we can make a case. I think we've got sufficient evidence now we know where to go. For instance, many of these abductees, when they come in and tell their stories, or contactees, whichever the case may be, these people are, by and large, telling the truth as best they remember it or recall it. And one of the first things I look at when I look at these people is to look at do a handwriting analysis on their handwriting after they fill out this 25-page form. We're questioning them in great detail because I'm actually able to tell whether they're lying or telling the truth, and I teach that on the college level for psychology courses as an example, just by monitoring them. And then second, and which is really important, after you get into their case, like the Pennsylvania case, is there evidence of any contact? I don't care what your story is there evidence?
Objectively, let's look at the evidence you've got. You've got a handprint on a wall.
Yes.
They sort of outlined after the fact. I'm not sure what that proves. You've got a soil sample taken from, I guess, allegedly where this craft landed. Is that correct?
The lady had mentioned that she heard a huge, this will really rattle some of your people out there in the audience, a helicopter come in the middle of the night. And, of course, I'm sitting here listening to this. I know it's not a helicopter. And if the story is true, it is highly likely it's a ruse for a UFO. And she said, but I don't understand. How could it come through those trees and that level and with the guide wires and things here? But the next morning she sees where the grass is burnt out there in three places in her backyard at 33 feet apart in a triangular form. And she's absolutely sure that was a helicopter. Now, this is a perfect screen memory. She was so sure. She woke up, heard the helicopter. And she said, it was so loud, I couldn't believe it. I said, why did it not wake up any of your neighbors? And she said, I actually slapped my husband to wake him up, to make him remember that I did this so that I can't let him know that I wasn't waking
got
up
it.
Making
All right,
up.
Well, you've got the soil samples. Have you analyzed?
No, we haven't. Samples. We just got back with the samples and everything, and one of our difficulties, and this is another reason I'm on your program tonight to mention this, I have, for the last 15 years, spent the majority of my additional income investigating cases. We never charge abductees a penny. We perform 24 surgeries to date, or been responsible for 24 surgeries. And any portion of that we did, we never charged them a penny. We just don't do that. We don't charge anything for any of these experiences. And I've never asked anybody for money and don't want to ask anybody for money.
Well, how do you pay for it?
Well, I pay for it out of my own pocket. And basically what's happened up till this last year, I just finally got tapped out. And kept my family pretty much financially broke, and I told them, I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to go back into real estate investing, and I found me a wonderful piece of property that if I can sell it and sell it for about half price, I can probably make enough to, in my opinion, pay for nearly two boxes of forensic evidence that we have right now, including a sexual assault on one abductee. We have the bed sheets and everything else from that event. So I'm not saying all these cases are 100%. What I'm saying is that they need to be looked at by people. I'm just the police officer in the deal here. Mm-hmm. My business is just to get it ready for the forensic lab, and we have a volunteer for a forensic lab right now, but we do have to pay for the cost of the university.
It's very expensive.
Yes, sir.
I know,
yes,
because I had a piece I had tested, and it came up very anomalous, but boy, it cost us a bunch of money, and Linda Howe and I kind of split the cost of having it tested. There's no magic angel that comes along and provides money for this.
That's true. That is so true. So what I've done is I literally prayed about it. I mean, I honestly felt like that if I need to be doing something here, that there need to be some kind of other help, you know. I mean, we got everything against us. And I came into a remarkable situation where a $5 million building with over half built a medical facility I put a contract on it, and they agreed to it at a remarkable price. And if I can sell that building to I will pay for not only all the UFO work that we've done here, but if that thing does go through, I will call you back privately and tell you what we're really going to be looking at, which in my opinion will be the smoking gun, so to speak, of physical evidence. But that's at this
point. So you have
something
you cannot tell me about?
Not over the phone. No, I'd need to do that in person.
Why?
It's not a violation. It doesn't have anything to do with my intelligence background. Doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just there are some cases that two in particular that we have found that are so remarkable that if in fact they are true as they seem to be. Because it takes the money then to exploit these, and I don't mind spending the money on it, even my own. But at this point, I'm tapped out, so I've got to sell this. So if you have anyone in that audience that has an interest in a medical facility over half built and want it for less than half price, I guarantee I'll give anybody in your audience $30,000 if they know anyone that has the money and wants to buy that building.
Mm-hmm.
It's theirs. $30,000 is theirs free, and I guarantee I will change the face of ufology in terms of physical evidence.
Well, you're implying you have some physical evidence.
Yes.
Okay, without telling me where it is so that it's safe, why can't you give us an idea of the nature of the evidence?
Just that it's physical, and that if the one case turns up to be true, we may have another Roswell.
Another Roswell.
Well, the only difference is it's not the government.
Another Roswell. Well,
are
you going to say you have a craft? Are you going to say you've got live or even dead aliens? Any of the above would be.
I don't know. Until I examine the case, I don't know. All I know is that the data so far has been interesting enough for me to spend to get ready to spend $3,000 just to look at it. It's been that good to me, so I will pursue it.
Well, when you say you have another Roswell, that's a lot.
If the story bears out, yes.
Really piqued my interest here. So all you've got
it
at this point is a story, or do you have more?
Well, we have a little more than the story. As an example, also this is the. This year, I'm a member of the staff at the Roswell Museum, and I found a witness, an additional witness, who was supposed to find the bodies out of Roswell, and this guy had never talked to anybody, didn't want to talk to anybody, scared to death, still one of these old-style guys, still scared to death of the government, thinks they're going to come get him, thinks he's going to lose his pension and all that. I spoke to him, and he finally he didn't trust me for a long time. Finally, we sit there, and he went in and brought the biggest stack of old pictures of that time era and his flight buddies and everything that he did. Just amazing guy. So I'm hopefully going to get him to come up to the Roswell Museum and do a presentation if he will do that this year. But he's not the when I mentioned the case of Roswell before, the craft, in my opinion, that crashed on purpose. I have a recorded conversation from someone I know that I trust 100%, that knows a little bit about what actually happened from one of the relatives.
Purpose. Yeah, we're going to come back to that, Roswell. And my guest, Darryl Sims, thinks he's got another Roswell. that I'm going to try and get him to tell us more about in a moment. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. My guest is Daryl Sims. He's been a UFO investigator for 38 years. And I'm going to give him a chance during the break to think about this a little bit. But he just made a statement that really needs a little bit of clarification, that he might have a case, another Roswell size type case with physical evidence and all the rest of that, and a little bit of money to get it all tested. I really need to know more, and I think all of you want to know more too. That's too much of a tease without giving enough good hard information, so ask him. We will. Daryl, you've been a UFO investigator for 38 years, and I've been a talk show host talking about this kind of thing for a whole lot of years. What we're going to leave the audience with tonight, if we don't go further, is a sense of just frustration and that they're not getting the real information. I mean, you sort of, I don't mean to appear mean, but you're laying out some stuff here and telling us what you can't tell us. You know, just too much of a tease without enough information. Daryl?
They say in real estate investing, the first person that speaks is the loser.
I see.
So I guess that's going to be me. The fact is that there are other cases that, first of all, we have that do have physical evidence that we are reasonably competent in. Even some evidence has been studied by genetic labs. Dr. Carla Turner, the late Dr. Carla Turner, gave me personally before she passed away. And other evidence, it's still, again, it just takes money to do this stuff, and that's the reason I want to sell this major building to do that. My secondary reason for wanting to sell that kind of a complex is simply because there are cases on very rare occasions that come up like this one that has. And there are two of them that I'm looking at right now, that if the stories are true, and there again, these are still, they're still stories at this point. If they're true, and if the information that has been given is correct, and it seems to be by the things that we've looked at, if it's worth a look at for me, it really is. And I would be prepared to spend the money to be able to exploit
that. I've got that, but give me more. You say you might have another Roswell. I don't care. Substitute something. Give me some idea of what this case involves.
It would just be. Let's just say that if the story is true and the evidence recovered. Is satisfactory with that story, we will no longer, you will probably not be having a lot of guests on your program after that, talking about, you know, possibilities of what could be or what couldn't be. You'll have not only the smoking gun, but you'll have the one that fired it, so to speak.
Yeah, well, we'd all love that, and that's what we need to move ufology from the mystical to the reality.
Well,
and we really need to make that move, Daryl, because, I don't know, listening to you, it's kind of like, well, we've got this, and maybe we can do this, but why can't I need to understand why you can't give me more. Without giving away anything critical, you could even speak in generalities about the kind of case you're talking about that you've got here that's so important. I'd just like to know more about it without find a way to say it without saying something that'll give it away.
Honestly, and I mean this with all due respect to you, because I respect you personally, there is absolutely nothing more that I can say about it. And in fact, the only reason I even mentioned it is because the fact that if we have the financing to cover mm-hmm. these type of operations, I will exploit them. In fact, what's going to happen if this case turns out? I'll give you a hint. If this case turns out to be what it's supposed to be, if that's true, I'll disappear for probably 3 to 6 months, and when I resurface, then everybody will know what it's all about. But it just.
Well, all right, let me try one on you. If this case is everything you say it is, Daryl, you wouldn't have to sell a medical facility or any other piece of real estate to get the money to investigate it. There's plenty of people out there with plenty of money if you've got something really good.
Well, I have not found that to be completely true. I've worked with several different people in the field, and even worked with NIDS, and which is a good organization.
Then that NIDS, for example, has the money behind it if what you've got is really solid.
Well, the fact is that you're in an awkward position there. The people, and rightly so. And this is the reason I always do everything my own way. We even have people from other UFO organizations that sends us their physical evidence to do the examinations of, because they don't trust their own organizations, because their biggest complaint is that their data disappears, and so does the evidence. The buck stops with me here. You know exactly where it's at. And in this case, whenever you have people who are funding you, so to speak, there is an expectation, and a reasonable expectation on their part, that they want to know all kinds of stuff. And in cases like this, the reason you don't have a Roswell now, and you probably have had one or two since then, is because people open their mouths. And that stuff will disappear so fast, you cannot believe it.
Well, I do understand what you're saying, and it is true that people who provide funding, and that they do have a reasonable expectation to understand they're not wasting their money, Daryl.
Sure.
So
that's why I want to spend my money. If I spend my money, I'm not answerable to other people. And whenever the evidence is finally examined and looked at by people, not me, I'm just the investigator. My job is to find the evidence, is to dig this stuff up and to go through it, putting my police hat on, so to speak, and to be the detective in that aspect, and look at it from other points of view. And then to take the evidence, present it to labs, forensic labs, particularly in universities where most of our stuff goes, and let them give us an opinion, because we don't hand this stuff over to people and say, this is our predisposed opinion, go ahead and support it.
All right, so you're distrustful of groups like NIDS or any other similar groups. You're distrustful of them. Is that correct?
No, I've had very good response with NIDS on things that we have cooperated on and done. There's as you hinted out very well, in the UFO community, there is mm-hmm. just a lot of. It's just far easier if you have your own money and do your own thing. You don't have the politics and so on. In our organization, we have a number of scientists, two of them are NASA scientists and others. We have quite a few people that are on our team, and the rules are real simple in our organization. If you want to fight, if you want to create a problem, you're history. It's just that simple. I don't care how valuable you are, how good you are. If you're not going to be a team player, you can't play. That's all. So that's the only real strict rule that I have about it. I don't mind the skeptics. I love skeptics. It's for scientists that we have. We just don't allow debunkers, because they already know what they're going to do. But skeptics are fine, and that's great. But we just will not allow people to. I'll give you a perfect example. I asked Bob Bigelow when I was speaking with him. I said, Bob, I've got to ask you a question, because it's always going to be asked of me that you actually spoke to Bob Bigelow and you didn't ask him the big one. I said, so the big one is this: you offered a lot of money to the MUFON and the Fund for UFO Research and KUFOS. Why did you withdraw it? He said, I'm glad to answer the question. He says, real simple. He said, Daryl, he said, out of it was either 2 or 3 years that he had offered all that money. He said, He said, the only requirement I had for those three organizations was to do one thing only, And that was to pick out any project you wanted. It didn't matter to me what it was. I will pay for it. But you all have to agree on what that one project is. He said, Daryl, in all those years, I could not get all those people to agree even on one thing. I was so frustrated. He said, I finally withdrew my money.
No, I believe it.
There's the answer to the question. Why do I want to use my own money? I mean, if NIDS can't deal with it, with the UFO community, why would I want to try it?
Well, if you have something as big as you're claiming you have.
Well, it's the claim is their claim. It's not mine. It's until I look at it, I make no claim. It's very interesting.
Well, for you to even bring this up, you had to have had some sort of look at it. There must be some proof or some level of validity that you've determined there is to what you know so far to even have you mentioned this on the air as you have.
Sure. That is correct. I'm interested. It's got my interest. It has certainly got my interest.
It certainly got mine, too, I certainly wish you could tell me more about it.
I wish I could, too. You have no idea.
Let me give you an example of how you could tell me about this. You could say, look, in the southwest part of the country, or the northwest, it doesn't matter, I've got a story from somebody, without giving any names, that says that a craft came down, and that we actually have this physical craft at a certain location, which I could take you to and allow you to collect all the physical evidence you want, or there is a being, or there's a body, or there's a live alien or something. In other words, you could give me a kind of a general idea of what it is you're working on without telling me any specifics.
You should have been in the intelligence field.
Yeah.
That's good. Answer is no, and respectfully so, because if you knew the story, you would get onto me for even mentioning it, especially if it were true, if it turns out to be everything that it's supposed to be, or even if it turns out to be half what it's supposed to be. Anyway, it's just my job to explore, and that's what I do. That's the detective part of this. I'm a licensed private investigator in the state of Texas, and this is what I also do. I mean, this is my policing background. All this is brought together in this field because I know that the events are real. We've got a sample of an alien hair that was left by a woman. You remember the Chalker case in Australia?
No, we have a not offhand. Remind me.
The individual was assaulted by a female Nordic type, for lack of a better term. Blonde-haired female alien, and she sexually assaulted the guy. And he, during the course of this, couldn't apparently overpower her mentally. As a result, he bit a part of her flesh and kept it in his mouth. And there apparently was a hair sample as well. And they did the DNA analysis on this and found that there are only like 6 people on the whole planet that have that DNA. And the best example of it is in Mongolia, in a rare tribe. Which may, again, suggest all kinds of other things to the people out there in genetics. But we've got a case right here in the United States with an alien hair sample of a guy who was sexually assaulted, almost the same story, elderly gentleman, and actually had the hair sample. So we've got that. Well, we probably got 2 boxes of DNA evidence of even one person who an artificial insemination, which MUFON recently stated by their doctor that those really don't exist in terms of alien artificial inseminations like the Betty and Barney Hill type situation. Well, if that may be true, but we may have evidence that shows something different, sonograms and other things that show something vastly different in there as opposed to a woman telling a story. And when you put all those things together and then the possibility that we may have a possibility of 3 people who are here without, and of course, the doctors are not going to be real surprised to find out that the husband's not the dad, the father, but they may be very surprised to find out the mother may not be the mommy.
Hmm. So, In other words, that would mean that some sort of embryo was implanted.
Yes.
Is that what
you're
implying?
Okay. Dr. Jacobs and Bud Hopkins, myself, have all said this for many years. Every abductee says what? They either took my sperm or they took my eggs. We felt like they did. Well, the question everybody needs to be asking instead of, oh, they're doing helping us, they need to ask the big question, you know, where's the milk factory? Where's all this stuff going? And what are they doing with it? Not just there, but what about here?
All right, let's go backwards for a second. You said that you thought that the Roswell craft was crashed, if you want to use that word, intentionally.
Yes, sir.
Why do you believe that?
Well, it's just a thought I have. One day I just got to look at Roswell. I'm not a Roswell investigator. Stanton Friedman and these other boys are, and they're doing a great job, and I appreciate that.
Right, but to make that statement, you've got to have some solid reason for
it. But the fact is, I wanted to look at Roswell from a totally different point of view. I wanted to look at it from an intelligence point of view. And if one wanted to penetrate the United States government or any government, what would be the best way to do that? Well, one of the best ways to do that was for allow us to capture you. In effect, any abductee or contactee out there can tell you that one of these entities, little entities, can download your thinking process immediately. They know exactly what you think. They know everything about you instantly. Mm-hmm. It's really a remarkable process. The point is, it doesn't matter whether you're captured or whether they captured you. But if we capture...
Well, I suppose that's true. So, what you're saying then about Roswell is just sort of a scenario that you put together.
The fact is, they crashed the craft, in my opinion, and eventually there would be a handler of the alien entity or two that survived. The handler turned out to be one of the top generals in the military-industrial complex. Well, duh. Let's suppose that the entities can do what I just mentioned, and you just placed your top general. Now, what makes this story interesting is I found out about 2 years ago, and this came from someone very personal, very close to me, as someone I trust with my life. They met an individual who was a relative of the high-ranking general who was assigned to the alien entity. And on the deathbed of this general, he told the relative the whole story, not just the Roswell, but the rest of the story that he did not tell the rest of the military-industrial complex. Well, I'm sure they'd like to know what that story was all about. The fact is
too.
That he ended up getting, becoming a, you want to hear me to put it in an interesting term, the Stockholm Syndrome, he became a victim of that himself and actually became friends with the entity. And, this entity hoodwinked him from the word go. And he never did tell the military-industrial complex the rest of the story of how they were friends. He only told them the things they needed to know in terms of intelligence and so on. What he didn't know was he was being used, that he was as much a pawn as the alien was for their causes. If that information is true, and they can download, and the big question any abductee should ask as well, and I asked this to all these people, and they look at me just stunned, like, you know, a calf looking at a new gate, like they never asked the question. Can an alien beam one in or out whenever they want to? Well, apparently they can, whatever that means. They can get them here or get them out, beaming them. I don't know what the term would be, realistically. But the fact is, if that were true, and he was here for 2, 5, 10, 15 years, why didn't he get beamed out? Because he was doing a good job here. You wouldn't remove your mole. You would keep it there.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at all of this, as you pointed out, from an intelligence point of view, you might do something like that. It's a credible scenario for a completely incredible thing, as far as most of the public is concerned. Listen, what we're going to do when we come back from the break that we're about to take is allow the audience to ask you questions. Do you think you're ready for that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's been a little frustrating, Daryl, in the sense that we hear about smoking guns and things ready to be tested, but no more than that. And so let's see what the public thinks. Coming up in a month, my guest is Daryl Sims, and we have certainly been Well, I guess the right word is teased a little bit, huh? Do you feel teased? I certainly do, but I guess I understand, and I guess I understand the distrust. After all, I said it myself, the UFO community shreds itself on a regular basis. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.